This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody, my name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And we are your hosts for the Toastmasters podcast. Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
Today we're going to be speaking with Mr. Croy Sather. Croy has a very interesting story he's going to share with us. With less than a year of training, he ran all the way from San Diego to New York City, averaging the length of a marathon, 26.2 miles per day, and managed to give a speech every day of this journey, all within 100 days. Amazing. Mr. Croy Sather, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Croy.
Thank you so much.
Croy, great to have you with us today. How the heck did you come up with this idea?
Kind of like most people, I was kind of sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I wanted to do something extraordinary. All my life, I had been mesmerized by people who had done amazing things, larger-than-life things, and one day, you know, I decided, why not me? Why can't I do it? So that's where this idea came from. You know, I heard about somebody who did it. I was like, okay, run across America. That's cool. How do I make it bigger? And that's where the speeches came in. Every day speaking to an at-risk group.
Well, right. Now, before this, you were not a runner, right?
No, just a year prior to my run across the country, I was a casual runner at best. So I might do 10 miles in a month.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Would you consider yourself an athlete prior to this?
I was a swimmer as a kid.
Uh-huh.
I have had some. I would consider myself athletic, but okay. not an athlete. So it was, the potential was there. I just had never harnessed anything. I had never tried anything like this.
Wow. Right.
Yeah, I think that means a lot because people will say, "Well, you know what? If you're a runner, if you've been running marathons all your life, and yeah, this is an amazing goal. But you know, that's for you. I can never do anything like that. But you, I mean, this is really inspiring considering that you are not a runner. I mean, you're not the kind of guy that you would see at the front of the lines of all the marathons. You were not that guy, but you became that guy essentially.
I created that guy, and I'm still not fast by you know running standards. I'm not fast. I'm still only at best a 4-hour marathon.
Right.
So I'm just sort of middle of the pack for my age group. And so I'm still not an athlete per se. I just did something kind of athletic.
Right. Kind of.
Wow.
So tell us about the speech aspect. I know you are a fellow Toastmaster, and as you said, you decided to work the speeches in. Who were the speeches given to in the course of your journey?
This was over the course of 100 days. So I ran a marathon distance a day and a speech every day. And virtually all of the groups that I spoke to were at-risk groups. So it was the United Way, Hope for the Warriors. I spoke to juvenile detention centers, which was interesting. You know, 5 levels of security to get into these places. Mm-hmm. Spoke to the military as well as rural high schools. You know, high schools that never see a motivational speaker.
Right.
How did you plan all this?
The speaking part was actually one of the hardest parts. It was a team of people that made it happen. This was very logistically incredibly difficult. And they pulled it off for me. They were an amazing team of people.
Now, I imagine that you really had to stick to your running schedule because, for example, if you had to plan all this out, you got to say, okay, I'm running 26 miles a day. You can't just decide to take one day off, could you? Because your entire schedule would be messed up otherwise.
Just a little bit of accountability, huh?
Yeah.
Any sickness or injuries along the way?
The only injuries I had was that my muscles were completely fatigued out. And at one point when I got about 3 weeks into it almost in Las Cruces, New Mexico, my body shut down and it just didn't want to go anymore. And I had done 25 miles that day and I still had 5 more miles to go for that day. And I sat down and my body was just like, you know, dude, that's enough. And I got up after a few minutes and I walked a 1/4 mile and then my body's like, no more. Forget it. You're not going any farther. So to finish the last 5 miles, it took me 5 hours, something that should have taken me maybe an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
But I wasn't willing to give in because if I gave in that day, like you just mentioned, if I fell short on my mileage, then the next day I would have been falling short and then eventually I'd never catch up.
Right.
So I had to keep going.
Right. How much of this was actually running versus walking?
It was probably about half and half by the time it was done. Wow. There were days that I ran the whole time and it was great days and I would finish in 5 hours, and there was other days that were just so painful that I could barely walk.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you did it. And that's the amazing thing about it. What did you do during this? I mean, were you listening to motivational material, your favorite songs? Did you even have an iPod or some kind of listening device? And if so, how did you charge the thing?
Most of the time, I didn't have any kind of music or audiobooks or anything. I would occasionally listen to some audio things on my iPhone, a little bit of music sometimes. But the majority of the time, probably 80% of it, I was just me in the road. A lot of quiet time, a lot of meditation, and the best therapy I've ever had in my life.
Wow. When you hit those low points, Croy, how did you manage to push through when your body was giving up? How did you just keep that persistence going?
There was two points that I could have given up, and the first time would have been justifiable. You know, everybody would have said, you just ran like 600 miles, your body quit. Yeah, of course, go home. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't, because the goal was so big. At that time, I had a staff of 15 people working for me to make this whole thing happen. And so there was the money aspect, all of those people waiting for me to come speak to them. My goal to myself, my dedication to myself and achieving this goal, so I couldn't stop. So that was the first part. Then when I got to day 74, I was like, man, another marathon? I just want to go home. Mm. I hadn't seen my kids in almost 3 months and didn't have any semblance of a normal life. My normal life was on a road in a different place in a different day every day. And I just wanted to go home. But I had remembered what somebody told me about a month earlier. And it was after one of my speaking events. Some guy came up to me, one of the audience members, and he said, at some point in the conversation, he says, Croy, you know, you can't quit now. And at that point, I wasn't even considering it. I was like, okay, I know, but what do you mean? He says, well, you've spoken to, what, 5,000 or 6,000 people by now, right? And I said, yeah. And he says, if you quit now, you're giving all of those people a reason to quit on their dreams. They'll say, if Croy can't do it, what does some kid from rural America have a chance on achieving his goals? Mm. So wow. I was like, oh, man. So I remembered that for the remaining 2 weeks of the run, almost 3 weeks of the run. And I was like, I can't quit. No matter how much I want to go home and hug my kids, I can't.
You know what that's called, Croy? That's called inspiration by guilt. And it's effective.
It was very effective.
Croy, would you say this challenge was most demanding for you physically, mentally, or emotionally?
It was actually all three at different points, and sometimes it was all of them. So the first part was more physical because it's the beginning. You're excited. It's fun. Okay, it's just a marathon a day, meeting new people, speaking to hundreds, sometimes 1,000 people a day. It was all exciting in the beginning, but it was physically challenging. And then that got into just plain boredom. And then at the end of it, it was all psychological because my body had adapted. I could run a marathon a day. It was fairly easy at that point, finishing the last 600 or 700 miles. But now it was psychological because I just wanted to be home. So at different points, it was different things, and at some points, it was everything. And most days, I spent 20 hours on the between speaking and running. I would sleep 4 hours a day, typically.
Mm. Did you sleep at hotels, or how did you manage your sleeping?
I had an RV. My crew and I slept in an RV, so we were in literally wherever we wanted to stop, that's where we slept.
Tell us a little bit more about the crew that was following you around. I take it they were following you around and not dragging you around like via roller skates or something, because that'd be cheating.
Yeah, that would be cheating just a little bit. I did have a crew. It was 4 people plus me. So there was a videographer and photographer because it's all going to become part of a documentary. Then I had a tour manager that made sure all the logistics were taken care of. I got everywhere I had to be. And then I had a massage therapist who took care of me physically and took care of my food. Mm. And we were all in an RV, so this tiny little tin box for 5 adults who had never met each other before. Talk about a reality show.
Wow. Interesting. And once you were giving the actual presentations to the groups, was it essentially the same keynote to each audience, or did you have a few different speeches you were presenting?
It was basically the same foundational core of it, and it was the same message for everyone. It just adapted to the audience. So one day I might be speaking to a classroom of young kids, so 9 years old. The next day I might be speaking to the military. The next day it might be addicts, drug addicts or alcoholics, and it literally changed every single day. And sometimes it was a tiny audience, sometimes it was 1,000 people, but the core was always the same. So it was the first part is the same as my book, Dream Big, Act Big, and then the final part was cross the finish line, meaning never give in. So kind of I was told by a Toastmaster friend of mine who coached me is you got to kind of have the I'm forgetting the name of that instrument, the thing that goes in and out, not an harmonica,
accordion.
Yes. He says your speech has to be an accordion. You have to have the same 3 points or how many other points you're going to have, and then you spread that accordion out if you have a longer speech, and you shrink it back in if you have a small one. And that's essentially what I did. And when I had the more difficult audiences, so either the addicts or the kids that were in juvenile homes, I brought out different stories. So I gave them the same message but different stories to help facilitate that message.
I love that image of the accordion. So, Corey, after giving 100 speeches in 100 days, how would you say your speaking changed over the course of that time period?
Like any person who's mastering something, whether it's basketball or crocheting or speaking, you just get better in time. You get more and more polished. It comes with experience. And I certainly, and very few people have ever had the experience of speaking a keynote a day for 100 days. So when I got back to my home Toastmaster Club and I gave the same speech that they had heard before I left, they're like, wow, you're just like, you've changed. You've kind of gotten into the stratosphere as far as quality. It all comes with the experience. It's like Michael Jordan. He was known for being the most dedicated person to the practice and the craft. Will Smith is known for being one of the most dedicated actors to his craft. And that's what I became in the process.
Hmm. Right.
Now, before all these keynotes, Croy, did you shower?
Most often. Not always, but most often.
I was going to say that probably would change the kind of reception that you get from your audience.
That's funny because when I looked up Croy's videos on YouTube, I was expecting him to like come walking out onto the stage huffing and puffing with sweat dripping off him, and I'm like, he cleans up pretty well for a guy who just ran a marathon.
Yeah, exactly.
I did literally run up to a few of them where my speaking event happened to be the exact spot I was stopping at, so we didn't drive to it. And I would literally just run right up to the auditorium, and then I'd go into the bathroom and I'd take a trucker shower, as they call it, you know, using the sink. And yeah. There you go. You got to do what you got to do.
That's right.
And given some of the audiences you were speaking with, you know, folks who are incarcerated or other at-risk groups, did you receive any, challenging responses from the audience? In other words, people who say, you know, maybe this stuff works for you, but it wouldn't work for, you know, the audience you're speaking with today.
Were there any hecklers?
I didn't really have any hecklers. I did have some rowdier audiences than others.
Right.
And one of my most rowdy was actually in New York City on the day before I was finishing. And because we drove ahead because that was where my speaking event was. That was one of my rowdiest. But the two most interesting ones, one was in New Mexico. It was a kind of a last chance house, a halfway house for teen men. And it was either straighten up, get it right here, finish school, or you're done. You're going to jail kind of thing. And they never introduced me. They never told them I was coming. This group didn't have a clue who I was. Hmm. So I get in there and I start talking to them. And this one guy says, who the hell are you?
And how do you answer that?
Like, they didn't tell you who I was? Like, no. They didn't tell you I was coming? No. Okay, well, let me back up a little bit and tell you what I'm doing and why I'm here. And once I explained that to them, and, you know, I had a challenging teenage years too. I steal cars and all kinds of horrible things like that. And I tell them those stories so that automatically I'm their peer group. Hmm. And they get it. I'm somebody who's come from the same ranks that they're at right now, and I've overcome that. So right. it's an easy way to win over an audience. Is when you can relate to them, and I've had a pretty interesting life, to say the least.
Yeah, sum that up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about that. I read that you got hit by a car head-on when you were 14, and it's kind of been downhill for a while, and then there was some kind of recovery, at least emotionally. Tell us about that.
Much like a roller coaster, that's the way my life has been. When I was 14 years old, I was riding home on my bicycle, and a drunk driver came over the hill, and she swerved to avoid my friends who were on the other side of the road, and she never saw me. She plowed right into me at full speed. My bike went underneath her car, and I went into her windshield, and then the police report said that I flew 50 feet before crashing to the ground.
Wow.
the local hospital couldn't handle the significant injuries that I had, so they sent me down to New York City, where they worked on me. And when my parents got there, the neurosurgeon, the guy who works on brains and skulls, because where I had fractured my head, told my parents that I would either, if I survived the night, I would be a vegetable for the rest of my life.
Oh, jeez.
So, of course, my mom collapses into my dad's big arms, and they cry and they prayed for a miracle. And my mom sat there by my bedside for the whole weekend holding my hand until I woke up 4 days later from being unconscious.
Wow.
A year of cast and rehabilitation and 2 years of headaches that literally would drop me to my knees when I'd have an episode, and then challenges that lasted for many years beyond that.
Is there any residual pain as a result of that today?
It's actually interesting. I don't have any physical challenges, which my one leg should have been several inches shorter than the other because I broke my knee. And they said that, you know, walk, run, you know, it's never going to happen. And yet I ran almost 3,000 miles across the country.
Yeah. Right.
So and it's just because an authority figure like a doctor says something doesn't mean that he's necessarily right.
Right.
And you can't believe it. The you know, it's the power of the mind and the power of wanting to overcome anything. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Croy, I want to ask you, why this goal? And I guess what I mean by that is, besides just checking it off your bucket list, I mean, that's in a sense kind of an obvious, but what did you really hope to accomplish from this whole journey?
It's actually multifaceted goals with this. One, it was, you know, kind of, you know, this is bigger, you know, the biggest bucket list thing that you can possibly do, run across the country. Mm. So that was sort of part of it. And that was the original idea. How do I do something really extraordinary? But then it was, how do I make it bigger than me? How do I leave a legacy? How do I leave a ripple effect of inspiration? And that's where the speaking engagements came in. But it was also, how do I further my career as a speaker? How do you get to the global spotlight as a speaker? That's kind of difficult. A lot of Toastmasters, they're aspiring professional speakers, and it's hard to break into it. So the part of it was, how do I put myself on the global map and doing something so big that you can't help but say, wow. So that was certainly part of it. And then, you know, it was just kind of the doing the ultimate thing physically. I've been a carpenter most of my life, and physically I have this incredible work ethic. But how do I push that to the limits? What is it possible for a human? Non-runner becomes a runner in a year. I mean, that's pretty incredible. I mean, that adds to the story. So lots of goals that were surrounding it. But the biggest thing, the biggest ultimate question was that at the end of my life, what do I want to be remembered for? What have I done to impact the world? And this was part of that process.
Right.
That's great.
And I guess I don't even have to ask if it was worth it.
Worth it so much that I'm doing it again.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
This time, no speaking. This isn't a speaking tour. This is just to run and break the world record. So the best runners in the world, the best ultra-distance runners in the world have tried to beat the world record that has been there for 32 years. It was set in 1980 at 68 miles a day. And some of the very best in the world, they haven't been able to do it. So some guy who's brand new to the running market is going to come in there within 2 years, and I'm going to average 72 miles a day for 41 days.
Wow. Jeez. Wow.
So basically 3 marathons a day.
That's unfathomable. Yeah. My goodness. And when does that start?
First week in September, 2012. So this coming year.
Okay. Wow. So you're going to be doing it in the autumn, which should be nice. Are you taking the same southern route?
No, this time I'm taking the same route that the world record was set on, which is San Francisco to New York, so right over the Rockies.
Oh, okay.
And then through the plains and then through the mountains of Pennsylvania, which I'm told is the worst part because there's no switchbacks. There's just steep grade in Pennsylvania.
Wow. And I bet through the Rockies at that time of year, there's going to be snow. I remember when I lived there. Driving through the Rockies in September, there was like a foot of snow.
I sure hope not.
Yeah. I don't mean to burst your bubble or spoil your plans, but just a word of advice. Bring some snowshoes with you.
snowshoes and crampons, and I should be good. Right. So just in case I have to climb a mountain.
Yeah.
And is the same crew going to be accompanying you for this run?
No, I'll need a different kind of crew for this. I will have a videographer and photographer, mm-hmm. but I'll need people who are much more familiar with the running world because I'm just going to be pushing my body to the ultimate limits.
Right. How about a medic?
Hopefully I'm going to get somebody who has chiropractic and massage experience, so basically a physiologist.
Yep.
So that way I have somebody who's like a doctor, but I don't necessarily need an MD.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But if somebody's willing to come along for the trip and spend a few days or a week or something with me, then you know, contact me. I'm more than happy to talk about it.
All right. Well, this is great stuff, Corey. Can you tell us a little bit about where we could find out more information about you?
My run is the same name as my book, so it's dreambigactbig.com. dreambigactbig.com. Mm-hmm. There you can find videos and tons of great stuff from my run. And then also, if you happen to want the book, then you can get that there as well. And then also, my name, croysather.com, is all about me personally.
Okay. How about the documentary that you were working on? Is that completed, or will that be completed soon? What's the plans for that?
It's on pause until I do this next run. So I'm going to – the documentary will be how do you go from, you know, basically a non-athlete to run across America and then to beating the world record.
Okay. So you got a lot riding on this, Croy.
I'm sorry?
You got a lot riding on this.
Yes.
This next run.
A lot riding. We talked about in the beginning is the accountability of, you know, I have to be in a certain place to speak every day. And then the accountability of the people behind me, and I can't quit. That was the way the first trip is designed. Now this one's designed that I put it out there, and basically everybody knows that I'm after the world record. So it's, you know, put up or shut up. And that's part of succeeding, is you got to have an accountability. That's what Toastmasters is about, is you go to the meetings every week or every other week so that you get better at your accountability, at your practice. It's the honing of the skill. It's the same process for whether you're becoming a world athlete or becoming a professional speaker.
Congratulations, of course, Croy, and we'll certainly look forward to keeping tabs on you and your progress this fall.
Yeah, indeed.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Bo.
You bet. It was great speaking with you again, Croy, and thanks so much. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.